And now it's time to get back to the futures.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. For this hour, we're going to talk to you about a number of things that involve local issues from a couple that we have met at various gatherings over the years that we usually have the most interesting conversations with them, very memorable and hard to tear away. And we kept thinking, well, we've got to share them with our community. And so we bring to the air, without further ado, Karina McFarlane and
Ryan Sarnatara.
Yes. Could you tell us a little bit about yourselves, folks? How would you like the public to be aware of your existence?
Okay. I'll begin. This is Karina.
Okay.
So Ryan and I have lived in Santa Cruz County for nearly 20 years.
Uh-huh.
7 years of those in Bonnie Doon, and then we had a 10-year-old nephew come live with us from England who wanted to boogie board, so we switched rental places to Sunny Cove, and we were there. We've had about 14 different addresses, so we've been temporary renters for nearly 30 years, happily married temporary renters. Do you think that kind of says it, Ryan?
Well, we're really broadly interested generalists who find ourselves moving from vignette to vignette in our lives. One of the vignettes that we have entered is the vignette of Adventure Care for the Disabled.
Adventure Care for the Disabled.
What a great title. Adventure Care for the Disabled.
It's like taking disabled on adventures?
Yeah, well, this is kind of wild, and so it all kind of, you have to kind of catch all the threads as they're moving. So
okay. We
have a friend who broke her neck 13 years ago now.
Maybe. Closer to 20.
Oh, is it? So
okay. Time flies.
The years. So we were in her house in Edinburgh when my sister got the call that she had had a terrible accident and she was in hospital. And my sister went down to visit her, and we came back to Santa Cruz, and Ryan said, you know, I can't get that woman out of my head. I think I have something to contribute to that situation. So the next time we went back to England, that was set up for them to explore that. And when I checked in on them both Ryan and this woman, Yinka, said what was happening was spectacular. And basically, Ryan had come in a year after the accident. She'd been told nothing would ever change and get used to it. And Ryan has said, wait a minute, you've got the use of your diet. Wait a minute. Before you knew it, they're doing resistance training, and she takes her first diaphragmatic breath in a year.
So you're saying that she found some new approaches that brought feeling back in her body?
With Ryan, because she was being treated like an invalid and lifted in and lifted out.
So when you treat it as an invalid, it keeps you in that condition rather than improving.
So he's
it.
Like, let's fold you in half. Let's...
I see.
We didn't bring any new capacities that weren't available from where her spinal cord ends, where the rest of her begins. But what we are able to do is actually motivate those parts that were visible to her conscious or subconscious mind so that they actually began to act much more in concert. Diaphragmatic breathing, for instance, you need to bring a person to a place of oxidative stress. That is, they don't have enough oxygen in their system. They will involuntarily take that deep diaphragmatic breath. And the way the human nervous system is wired, the diaphragm is controlled much higher up in the spine than, say, the muscles of the chest
itself. So it might be more accessible.
It is able to be moved.
Well, I guess so. Breathing would be core to life itself, so it would be the most protected.
And moved with your conscious effort.
Yes.
Even if you've lost the use of, say, your legs.
Or your unconscious need. And in this case, that's what happened with her. So anyway, we have found ourselves on various journeys all around the world.
Huh.
And taking her around in her little manual, quickie fold-up wheelchair. Now, a quickie wheelchair is a light little manual thing. You know, you see wheelchairs around town. There are these big, heavy...
You want something you can travel with.
Vehicles, right? Well, no. Yeah. You want something you can take on the airplane, that you can go places with. And also, if you're out hiking, a lot of times trails are quite narrow. So how do you take a wheelchair down a hiking trail? Well, you have to tip it on one wheel. Once you get it on one wheel, you can boogie. And
whoa.
So
sounds dangerous.
Well, yeah, you know, you just gotta
hey,
stay conscious
here.
So anyway, we have done travel to the islands of Fiji and the jungles of Costa Rica and the wilds of India and
Wounded Knee and
Burning Man.
Wow. And these are all with these special adaptive vehicles.
These are all with that one quickie wheelchair.
A quickie wheelchair.
Yeah. If we need to carry her, we carry her.
It's a fold-up wheelchair.
It's a fold-up wheelchair.
Okay.
And I actually had a dream before I ever met her, because Ryan did this thing with her before I met her, that I carried her on my own. All right, is this real or not? If this is real, I'm going to throw her in the bucket seat of our old Honda Civic and go up to Felton to White Raven Cafe and put her in an armchair so we can both write in our journal, dispense with all the equipment and caregivers and everything. And I did it. So we learned bit by bit that we could do more and more crazy and intrepid things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that gives her more mobility, more fun to be out in the world.
Absolutely.
And that really makes a difference in your demeanor, wouldn't you say?
Break down the barrier between what is so-called invalid or disabled.
Mm.
We're just people hanging out, right?
Right. And you make it more of a fun social experience, which is, of course, that's what brings beauty to life in any
totally.
Regard.
That's what
totally.
You do with your
whoever
friends.
You are.
Yeah, exactly.
She was a black belt in Aikido and lived in Japan. So she was an
that's
intrepid
quite a shift for her.
Person.
Wow.
Yeah, so so she's intrepid, yeah.
So she needed to get that energy back out again somehow.
Totally fearless.
Yeah. And she also made a statement to me once, because she's happy, right? And she said, well, I was a happy person before I got paralyzed, and I didn't change as a person.
For her, what a great attitude.
So it didn't wound her psyche in a way that stopped her from wanting to explore. And
well, she had a transition, let's say that.
Yeah.
You go through the dark night of the soul as you integrate an entirely different life than you had imagined.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. It's very interesting because, you know, I've been thinking about traveling through virtual reality and things like that. So you're actually taking people on a physical journey when they're immobilized. So, so it's an interesting flip, if you will.
Well, and what I like about this conversation is it's a conversation about how self-imposed limitations are something that you can stretch yourself beyond. So you find your own limitations, and you may have things that are actually truly outside of your range, but your own limitation is in your reach, not in your grasp, as they say.
Yeah.
How far you aim.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, guess that's a really good time to come back in a few minutes and talk about it more. You're listening to the Dr. Future Show on KSCO with our guests, Karina McFarlane and Ryan Sarnataro. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Ryan Sarnataro and Karina McFarlane. I guess it's with as well.
Yeah,
I like that better. No, let's go back for a moment to
Yinka.
When Yinka had a realization from working with you guys, with the little help, she was able to control her breathing.
First diaphragmatic breath.
It's called diaphragmatic breath. Yeah. Now, what's that like? Is that a...
like a deep gulp breathe, right?
A deep...
Yes. You're in the water and you've run out of air.
Yeah.
Really? So
it's involuntary.
Huh.
It's the kind of thing you try and induce when somebody has hiccups, right? You hit them on the back and go...
So it might be a little unpleasant, but it shows that you're alive.
Yeah. So the piece that's really important to do with the mobility or transition into mobility is that Yinka said that the year between her accident, when she broke her neck, and when Ryan came and they got that deep breathing happening, It felt like she was living in a coffin from the neck down.
Wow. So her whole consciousness was thinking that she was in a coffin.
Yeah.
Like a dead.
Yeah. So the shift was then she could see or begin to get a glimmer, perceive that there could be a life beyond
that,
being completely encapsulated in a useless dead body. Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Suddenly the world opened up again. Because your world does shrink a lot when you're... I mean, it shrinks for me when I get sick. You know, suddenly it's an adventure to go to the bathroom.
Which it is for her.
Yeah. Right, I'm sure. Well, all the time, right?
It's not like just a cold. Shitting in the woods is another one we can talk about.
Adventure travel. Well, Ryan, what was your connection with Yinka?
Well, like I said, our lives operate in a series of vignettes. And so I had never met this woman or even heard of her before I went to that apartment up in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And something happened in the course of the phone calls and conversations that communicated that she had broken her neck. And there was something that opened up in me. I kind of heard the message that I could be a part of this. And I made sure that when I finally got back to England, which was a year later, I was able to have that encounter. And in the course of that encounter, I just worked with my own native instincts, maybe a little bit of my knowledge of biology. And what came through were solutions to some of the issues that she had. One of which was, as a black belt in Aikido, she hadn't worked out in a year. But she had inside her that desire to push.
Yeah.
Well, what could she push with? All she could push with were her shoulders. So
that's the start.
I put her on the floor. I put my bare feet on her shoulders. And just like your sort of standard exercise coach, Nasi, I got her to push.
Wow.
And I got her to push and push and push until all of a sudden that breath came.
Was she able to do other things after the breath? Did she start?
She, again, the nerve flow to the muscles that she still had, and her break was at a C5, fifth cervical. Cervical vertebrae that gives her control over the top part of her arm, but not the bottom. Mm-hmm. So those muscles are there. They get to be moved. That's what's under her conscious control. Christopher Reeve was exploring actually reconnecting some of those nerve fibers and getting control over areas of his body that were...
You could neurally regenerate.
Neurally regenerate, right. And it was such a shame that...
Which is always thought to be impossible. That I was taught in
school. Thought to be impossible, but there are a lot of things like that, Dr. Future, that so I am sure you explore on
this
show.
Yes, yes. Never what you necessarily have been taught.
Well, what you believe is what you perceive.
Yeah, what's my narrative about that now?
Then that's what you achieve.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Things are possible. But mobility, I think, is an important key for many people who have a use of mobility and lose it. That's huge. And that can lead to depression. It could lead to, like you said, feeling like you're in a coffin. Mm-hmm. It would seem to be a very powerful way of dealing with life. If people could have adventures, actually move their bodies out in the world more often, seems like a good idea. Do you see this as a service that can be brought to a higher scale in our culture, where there are services along these lines that are part of what everyone gets when they become incapable of moving?
I've actually done a little caregiving for other folks here in Santa Cruz. Unfortunately, the American system does not provide the level of financial support that the British system does.
The British system supports that kind of thinking.
Yes. You can get paid 24-hour care as a quadriplegic in the UK. You're not going to get that here.
I wouldn't say they support that kind of thinking, just that Ryan and Yinka have been incredibly creative with the money that she does have, saying, well, why lie in bed using this money for 24-hour care? Let's get on a plane and go to India or whatever.
So what kind of adventures have you guys done with Yinka?
Well, I was going to say that the whole journey is on a continuum. So Yinka went to the London Paralympics to watch, for instance, came back to Bath, where she lives in the city of Bath. She has a weekly spa session where my sister is the caregiver and she gives her watsu in the water and such. But after she went to the Paralympics, she was like, well, I saw people propel themselves and they had no arms and no legs, so I must be able to do something. And she figured out that she could roll and rotate herself, propel herself across the swimming bath.
Wow.
So
that was another breakthrough.
It's
sort of like being a baby again
and
learning what kind of body you're in.
Well, being in the water seems like it would really allow whatever movement you have to be played with more easily.
But you first have to have the consciousness shift that something is possible. Mm. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So there's a very interesting thing about how Santa Cruz really helps and weaves it all, because they were in a miserable English winter, too long, too wet, too cold, and they're like, oh, we wish we were in Santa Cruz. We're like, can you get her on a plane? Can you get her here? We don't even have a spare room, but it's not the rainy season and she could sleep on our deck. And they get over here,
yeah,
and all of a sudden she got exposed to people leaving for Burning Man, people going to Bioneers. Can I go? Can yes. I go? Can I go? And that's why we ended up in the jungles.
Yes, in the new class
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
Punta Mona.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Where they had a class in yoga for quadriplegics?
Or? Well, we had a jungle doctor come in on a boat and do surgery on her while she was fascinated, because it doesn't even hurt when they're cutting your arm, you know, so.
Oh, boy. One of the advantages of losing all your nerves.
Yes.
Do we have a caller, wow. Mrs. Richard?
Yes, we do. We have Leonard with Wave Riders, who wants to talk a little bit or say something about rehabilitation. Do you guys know Leonard? Hi, Leonard.
Hello?
Welcome to the show.
Hey, Leonard.
30-year listener, first-time caller.
Oh, well, thanks for calling.
My wife works with disabled children in the community who are severely disabled, bedridden, or wheelchair-bound. And the Wave Rider Foundation and a couple volunteer groups do an unbelievable job in bringing a moment of joy to these kids' life that is phenomenal. It's highly impactive. And when you talk about being active with the disabled, the effect that it has is immeasurable. It's the best medicine.
Wow.
Some of these kids are waiting 2-3 years to get a new wheelchair or a new splint. They outgrow their devices like normal kids do shoes.
Wow.
And the support is hard to get for them. It's a big struggle in the families.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with 24-hour care, they may only get 15 or 20 hours nursing care or aid care a week. Uh-huh. And it's kind of sad, but the people that do it are the closest things to living saints or deities that you have. They are selfish, and they're like the holy people among us.
Oh.
They'll all walk around and do these great impacting things on your children's lives. We should have a day for them.
Yeah.
A celebration for them.
Maybe a party for them.
Yeah. And the second thing, I couldn't get back to the house in time to call you about the planets. local astronomy club caught something on their telescope, and if you go to DWDE, David Western David Edwards, 115 on YouTube, caught something going across the surface of the moon on video when they were testing their telescopes for the upcoming moon, which is absolutely mind-boggling.
Wow.
As to what it could be, the size, the speed, how close is it? There's supposed to be 4 satellites in orbit, I guess, currently around the moon. Mm. And whatever he caught on the telescope with the Eclipse telescope is big.
Could you say the website again? DWDE?
David Western David Edward.
Edward.
DWDE.
E, okay.
115. And it's a YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's it. Okay.
Cool.
And it's Mysterious Thing Across the Moon is the label on it. He's got all kinds of local stuff, all the festivals. My hat goes off to the people who are working with their friend and the people who are disabled. And those families, when you have a disabled family, it's not what you're signing up for when you get married and want to have a family. And the stresses on those families are unbelievable. A normal family, we complain about our poor lives and how stressful it is. But the stress and impact on the relationships and the demand on siblings, and it's heartbreaking.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Leonard.
Do you guys have any feedback?
They don't get the support they need.
Yeah.
We don't support our disabled children.
Yeah, it's really important to say and not have anybody be invisible.
Yeah. Well, hopefully your call and our guest today can maybe get a lot more people thinking about it. And Wave Riders, I think you guys are doing great work out there, and I'm really glad you called in to let us know more.
Yeah, we just shouldn't treat these children like we do our veterans with the VA system, and that's the heartbreaker.
Hmm. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, thank you. I remember at Maker Faire last year, I saw an area dedicated to creating limbs with the 3D printers, spare limbs. They had kids designing their own limbs.
Wow.
That seemed like a nice direction to go in with this relatively inexpensive technology to create some, because a lot of these prostheses need to be personalized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think they also need to have a social life. I mean, I think that's the main thing I'm taking away from what you guys are doing, is that you didn't really know much more than anybody else in Yinka's world, but you just decided that it was your call to make something happen. And years later, it's been the source of great adventures.
Absolutely.
I applaud that effort and put that spirit out. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see more of that. Mm. We're here for each other. Well, in that, folks, it's time for our next break here on Dr. Future, and then we'll be back with more. Stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll probably talk about it in a completely different topic in the next half an hour, but if you have call-ins regarding this one, we'll do that. But stay tuned, Wheel. Same guest, different topic.
Dr. Future Show.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yes, indeed. That was a fascinating conversation this last half hour, and mobility and being able to bring more mobility to
our friends.
To our friends.
To each other.
They've lost some of their ability. It's fantastic, you know, and I hope it continues to evolve. Ryan and Corrine actually have some other interesting chapters in their life they'd like to share with us while they're here.
Yes, and let me just give a little intro, because at the farmer's market this last Saturday at Cabrillo, I happened to be going by, and, you know, there's always somebody asking for you to sign petitions there. And there was a person who was asking me to sign a petition about the local bike trail initiative. And so I was able to get an earful about that. And this timing was so perfect, because I know, Ryan, that you're quite involved in this local initiative.
Yes, this 32-mile strip of railroad from Watsonville to Davenport that's been kind of abandoned for years. What's up with that?
Well, that 32-mile strip was once quite the vital rail corridor. Maybe people don't really know, but Santa Cruz was a center of chewing gum and tea for a while.
Chewing gum and tea?
That's right. There was a Wrigley chewing gum factory, and there was a Lipton tea factory.
Yes,
and they both filled rail cars every week.
Really? Those were the culprits, huh?
And the cement plant, and of course.
The cement plant. That's why I went on to Davenport.
Yes. Uh-huh. And the extractive industries.
Those rail cars, where did they go to? Did they?
Watsonville.
They went from Santa Cruz to?
Yeah, they went away because there's no reason for them to be here anymore.
But they went to Watsonville. Let's finish the old system here. They went to Watsonville and then to destinations like San Francisco and L.A. and
yes, down to Oxnard.
So it was a whole railroad distribution network, and this was part of it that's beginning to fade away. And this is a leftover remnant of those days gone by that is now mostly pedestrians, well, people walking on it.
And we're talking about what can we do with it for the future.
Yes, and that has been something that's been studied in Santa Cruz for decades, really. Huh. The first study was in 1983.
Really? It was
and in 1983.
That, they that long?
Yes, it's been that long. And there were studies in the 80s, the 90s, the 00s. The most recent study was in 2015, and it came to the same conclusion that the 1983 study came to, which is if you want to put passenger rail in here, it's going to cost a real lot of money that we don't have, and you're going to lose a huge amount of money on it every year that will have to come from somewhere.
Railroads is 20th century at this point.
19th century.
Excuse me.
And you have to think that where did the rails come from? What was around before rails was something like the Oregon Trail, you know, ruts of dirt. And
horses.
Rails were much better than that. But now as we enter the 21st century, the question is, what is the most efficient way to move people around? Mm. And just like in many other areas, miniaturization, smaller scale, efficiency, and electricity are combining to create transportation options that are entirely different than what the transportation options were of the 20th and the 19th century.
What, Segways? I mean,
electric bikes, maybe? Yeah.
Electric bikes.
We were watching a cute little video of a single person covered electric pedal-powered bicycle spinning around in the snow in Norway. And there are so many options that are coming up in our near future. Hmm. So the question in Santa Cruz is, you have rails that are sitting there. This 2015 study done for the Regional Transportation Commission said, Over time, they're all going to have to be taken up. The rail ties are inadequate for a passenger rail service.
So they're probably not safe at this point, especially the trestles, no doubt.
Yes, there's all kinds of issues that are involved in putting in rail. But there's the option here in Santa Cruz to actually take out those rails and put in a trail. And there's actually the money for that trail that has already been approved by the voters of Santa Cruz County.
When was
that? Which is Measure D, 2016 election.
From what they call it, the Rails to Trails initiative?
No, that was actually a sales tax increase that funded quite a few different things, and 8% of it, or about $80 million, was allocated towards the rail corridor. Now, the definition of what the allocation was study, maybe make a trail. It was not enough money to put in rail. And so right now, our county is facing the choice of what to do there. And you have really two different threads that are going at it. You have one side that believes that the rail should stay there, even though we can't put in a train now, because at some time in the future we might. Then you have the side that I'm on, which is various folks who believe that actually it's time to take out the rails, and not only take out the rails, but put in a proper transportation-oriented trail. And that's not a skinny little piece of pavement or something like what you see in Arana Gulch, which is wonderful to have, but boy, it's...
You mean more like Venice Beach, where you have bikes separated from pedestrians?
Yes, bikes separated from pedestrians. And you basically have a fast lane and a slow lane. And what happens in that fast lane, of course, is going to be your bicycles. But it's also going to be these new generations of e-vehicles. Mm-hmm. And these e-vehicles, and this, I think, will segue a little bit into what Karina's doing right now with our friend Yinka, who's coming to visit us next week from the UK.
She's going to be having one of these e-vehicles?
Well, it's not e, it's muscle power. But they're nonetheless,
it could be on the horizon.
Bike
lane. Okay.
And you have this difference in vision. And there are plenty of facts and figures that can be brought out about this. But I think that the most interesting aspect is psychological. Because what you're looking at is a clash between a vision based on the past, a vision grounded in nostalgia, and one that believes that we can make for the future what happened in the past successfully. And then you have this other vision, which is, let's wipe the slate clean, let's bring the future in, even the unformed future, and let's make something that works for a wider variety of people.
People actually use.
Yes. Yeah. That transportation study in 2015 said that a train would be used by about 2,700 people a day. To give you an idea, you've got 100,000 going up and down Route 1 every day. It's a tiny fraction. So you're not talking about something that's going to provide some sort of general mobility for the county.
We're not going to have less traffic on 17 if we use this. We'll
or
just one. Have the same traffic on 17.
Or yeah. Highway 1.
Or Highway 1, right.
Doesn't impact that either.
Oh, uh-huh.
My friend August asked to ask you, what about the wildlife? You know, there's a whole ecosystem along the tracks because it's been abandoned for so long that all the wildlife have gotten used to and are part of their territory now.
Yes,
and they use it for mobility. From whatever, have more humans affect that?
Well, I am sure that they will in the daytime, but at night it's still up to the animals. And the difference between putting in a bicycle trail and an e-vehicle trail and putting in a train is if you put in a train, you're going to put in a big steel fence.
It's not safe for pedestrians and bikes.
Well, exactly. Like you one have or the other. To separate them.
Well, yeah. So you want to have machines that are more safe to be around pedestrians and bikes. Like bikes. Bikes are safe to be around pedestrians, relatively speaking. Like Segways or what about electric scooters?
Oh, and these skateboards the kids are on these days?
Yeah, those things.
Yeah.
They fit right in, too. The one-wheeled ones look interesting.
All right, so we've got a 32-foot-wide, 32-mile-long swath of land that we're talking about.
But it needs
about.
To be graded properly.
And it connects downtown Watsonville to downtown Santa Cruz, and it goes along
all
the coast.
All the way to Davenport.
It meanders, it goes to Aptos, and then it swings its way back through Capitola. The people who believe in the rail think you can put a trail next to the rail. However, there are miles where you can't do that.
Mixed use?
And, well, mixed use, Yes, but mixed use between a train traveling up to 40 or 50 miles an hour and bicycles and pedestrians.
Sounds dangerous.
Yes. And of course, you won't be able to have both in the places where you've got a trestle in Capitola, tracks down the middle of Aptos, going from the boardwalk up to Broadway. These are all areas where there's no room. And right now, going back into the wildlife, there's a lot of trees. Mm. If you're going to try and squeeze a trail next to a track, you're going to have to put in retaining walls, take out an awful lot of foliage.
What about a drone trail above it? Because we're going to have a lot of drones coming in.
Dr. Future wants to know.
We need to have...
Can we have electric flying vehicles on this trail?
And keep them away from people's houses? They could fly along the trail and...
Well, the idea that's... There are people in Santa Cruz who think that personal rapid transit up in the air, little pods.
Yes.
You just hang them and let them roll all over
the
place.
Oh, we're working on it here. Yeah, we have a Santa Cruz company.
Hey, Bailey, we have a caller. We have a ton of callers.
Let's bring in our callers here. But yeah, I think we need to consider that in the future. But these other layers could happen first easily. Like you could easily have a trail and mixed bicycle pedestrian use right now. And it probably could rip up the steel and it would pay for it.
Yes, there is a study showing that you can take the steel up and it will actually generate some income.
There you go. Okay, right. So let's bring our caller here.
Jim, I'm sorry, we have 1 minute for you. So you got a quick question for us?
This is a thinly veiled NIMBY attempt to take public money to build a bike trail next to rich people's houses. We have a real transportation need. If you see the traffic in the morning, it comes from the south to the north and up Highway 1, and then half of it splits left to Santa Cruz and half of it splits right to 17. And you could easily move this traffic.
Okay.
Well, you dropped there.
Yeah, we lost you there, Jim.
Did you get the gist of what he's saying?
I think it's important to understand that the future transportation, whether it's bicycles, small e-vehicles, is extremely egalitarian. There is a lot of opportunity, even more so than cars, for people to get around. It's important to understand that equitable solutions don't always involve large sums of money subsidizing a few.
It would take way more money if it was an actual train. I mean, bike paths a lot easier and a lot less expensive, I would say.
Yes.
When we come back from the break, let's kind of get back on the page of comparing apples to apples, apples to oranges, and oranges to pomegranates. Because I fear we're kind of all over the map.
Otherwise, we'll have a fruit salad.
Be right back. Dr. Future Show.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking about the Rails to Trails plan to deal with this 32-foot-long railroad track that we have north to south in Santa Cruz County here. Ryan has been looking at a mixed use, I guess you might say, a bicycle pedestrian track.
Ryan, could you maybe give us some numbers since we were just talking about the cost, the usage, the impact on the traffic? It seems to me that these are all very
like
separate
highway.
Issues.
The Highway 1 is congested for sure, and it has nothing to do with this. It's a whole other Miguel. I think that's what I think of. We could bring in Elon Musk's boring company and create a new lanes underneath the existing ones, solve that problem. But that's not this. This is another issue.
Yes. The expected capacity of the train is about 3%. 2 to 3% of that of the highway. So you're not going to really at all impact the traffic on the highway.
3 out of every 100 cars might not be on the highway.
And right now there's no money for a train, but there actually is sufficient money to build that entire trail from one end to the other.
So I think a train costs something like $500 million, bike trail been allocated like $80 million in the bond issues, something like that.
$500 million?
$500 million.
Right now in the Regional Transportation Commission budget, that one that goes through 2040, they have a deficit of $283 million to build a train. And that is actually quite a low estimate, considering that the vast majority of rail projects go quite a bit over budget, and that the actual operating deficit was, by their study, estimated to be $14 million a year.
Okay, well, what in your estimation
they're
actually...
they're going to spend $14 million... let me just say, they're going to try to spend $14 million a year to move 2,700 people?
A day.
Yeah, it seems like a waste of money compared to what you would get from just making it a bicycle pedestrian path.
So the 3% that will be saved from the drive will be riding electric bikes on this trail? Is that what you're saying?
No, the 3% would be riding on whatever train was put in. Now, yeah. The county of Monterey faced the same decision, and they put in a bike trail. And their bike trail became so popular that they have now started to move towards constructing a separated bike and pedestrian trail.
Like they have in Venice Beach. Yes. Now, is that possible here? Is it wide enough to be able to support both a bike and a pedestrian trail?
In most places, yes.
There's a few places,
like the Capitola Trestle, for instance.
Right. What do you do there?
Well, you're going to have, if in the Capitola Trestle, you might have 18 feet or 20 feet that are usable, going to narrow it down. But if you wanted to leave the rails in, of course, the only way you go through Capitola is to go down onto the streets and up the hills.
I see. Okay, so that's the worst comes to worst. You go back to the way it is now. But to be able to have a straight shot at riding a bike or walking through town without having to cross roads or dealing with traffic is amazing. What an experience that would be.
You folks would have a wonderful time getting it from your house to this studio.
I can just imagine what it'd be like just to be on it or something. That would be really cool. It's a new route through town that's uncongested. You know, and it won't be if it doesn't have too many vehicles on it.
It's a 32-mile-long linear park.
Yeah.
In New York, you have the High Line, which is an incredibly popular abandoned L, or elevated train, track. And it's green. It's a place where people can be.
Yeah.
And in Santa Cruz, we have that opportunity. And instead, for the idea that we want to, in the future, possibly use rails that actually still need to be replaced and probably moved, we would hold them there and prevent ourselves from having this resource now is really a shame.
Yeah. Well, maybe what we could do is hold forth the option that in the future we might want to spend $500 million on a train. But in the meantime, while we're waiting, instead of doing nothing, we could have this wonderful bike trail.
That's called rail banking, which is the way that you hold the corridor, hold on to the rights to put a railroad in, and if in some future time you want to do that, and it's only happened a few times in the U.S., you will put it in.
What kind of cost are we talking about for an actual trail?
There's a couple of different groups that have done some work on this. The Greenway Group hired some independent consultants who came in with an estimate of $60 million to build that trail.
And what would they do for the $60 million? What do we get for it?
Oh, you're taking out the rails. You're putting in a divided paved surface, properly graded, properly drained. That goes the entire 32 miles. And you think 32 miles on a bicycle isn't too far. It's a bit, but
that's a day. That's a lovely day outing on a bike.
How much does it cost to build a mile of freeway?
It will cost about $600 million to expand our freeway from 2 to 3 lanes all the way down to Watsonville.
$600 million.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's dealing with the real problem.
About the same as putting in a train.
Congestion. This is more a recreational addition, in a way, right?
The goal is to have it be more than recreation. You've got schools. You've got other.
You're going to have first responders that are going to want to use it, you know, to get places if it's congested on one and stuff like that. You know?
That's an interesting idea because it will be available for that.
It's definitely supposed to be a commuter, multi-transit corridor. One of the things I've sat as a silent witness mainly in city councils and regional transport meetings to hear all the voices, and people feel very strongly about what position they're taking on it, and these are all good people that I've known for years and years in Santa Cruz, and so I would really like to see a civic council, a wisdom council on this issue in Santa Cruz County. You actually pull people randomly, 12 or 24 people. And the thing is, when you're sitting in these public meetings, the facts don't add up. So I'd like to say that in Syria, in Austria, when they had Syrian refugees pouring in, destabilizing that region, they used Wisdom Council, Civic Council, to address that issue very, very successfully. So I would say, look at wisedemocracy.org and the Wisdom Council and what they did in Austria with the Syrian refugees. And then suddenly, what we're doing with our rail corridor looks like a breeze. I would love to see something like that happen. And really, you take random, you randomly take 12 or 24 citizens, and then they're given all the different...
Well, it sounds like a grand jury. You're kind kind of trying to do a grand jury on the transportation proposals.
And it's different from a grand jury in that it's choice creating instead of decision making. So actually something comes out of it that's almost magical. So we get back to our magical realms.
WiseDemocracy.org.
Yeah. WiseDemocracy.org, yeah.
Are you involved with that yourself?
I am. I'm not trained to... I could assist at a civic council, but I'm not highly skilled for something of this magnitude.
And do you know people that are?
Oh, I definitely do. Jim Ruff is the man who trained the people in Austria, and he's awesome. And also Rosa Zubizarreta. She's another highly skilled, and she did her MA in Sonoma State on... dynamic facilitation, which is what Wisdom Council is.
No.
So I just want to point out to everybody, we have about 3 minutes left on the show. We've had people who would love to chime in on the conversation, and we also need a little bit of contact information from you guys. So if we could maybe just wrap up this part of the conversation.
We'll take the calls at the last part of the show.
Give the callers a chance to say something quick. So did you want to just finish?
You should talk about your wheelchair, honey.
Oh, so I should say, Yinka is coming, and I didn't want us to have to go in the car. We bike everywhere. So I was trying to figure out a bike wheelchair thing, and I found a duet tandem wheelchair bicycle. Mm. A battery assisted, it's $9,500. So we started a GoFundMe campaign, which is gofundme.com/sharedadventureshealingrides. And the idea is that we could somehow benefit Shared Adventures with this bike when we get it. We're not going to pull that off in the time frame we want the bike for Yinka. So I'm building one. And I got yourself my wheelchair at Grey Bears.
Uh-huh.
And a woman this morning responded to my Craigslist plea for a free bike. She brought in a brand new free bike for me. So I'm going to show you when I'm done.
Fantastic.
What this looks like.
Well, good. Well, we can connect you with the Fab Lab, too.
All right. So I want to say thank you, Karina McFarland. Thank you, Ryan Sarnataro. And we'll go quickly. We do have to
email.
Get to
do you have an email
person
you want to get in touch with?
Karina@cruiseio.com.
C-O-R-R-I-N-A
twice.
Okay. C-O-R-R-I-N-A.
All right. So here we go. Barry and Aptos, you have about 30 seconds. Sorry. There you go. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Ryan and I know each other, and we're always engaged in robust conversations. There's an awful lot going on. I'd love to do a Wisdom Council type of approach, and I think we're having that discussion now. I urge everyone to check with Fort at railandtrail.org for the pro-rail side of the equation. There's so many things to say, but I'll just say this. There is funding in the state rail plan to the tune of $248 million.
Wow.
Okay, great to know. Thank you so much. Sorry we have to
cut it.
This has been a really interesting week here on Dr. Future Show. Anything else you want to say, honey?
Hey, it sounds like it's going to happen. That's great. I can't wait. All right, thanks, folks. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
It's another week in the camp, and enjoy your weekend there. It's beautiful. If you're local, get out there and do some walking by the ocean. It's incredible right now. Thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
Bye-bye from KCO Santa Cruz.